Hello, welcome. Welcome to Movie Humpers. My name is Bob Sham.
I am Angela.
And the sounds here may be dogs. And I just want to say it will be past the point by the time this episode drops. It's actually your birthday when we dropped Murder, My Sweet.
Yes.
That's the day of your birthday. But I just want to say happy birthday and I love you.
Thank you. I love you too.
Because it is your birthday on this day in which we record this a week in advance.
Yes.
And what better way to celebrate your birthday than talk a double recording session talking about classic film noir movies? Because this month, we're calling it the Left Hand Endeavor. Every weekday, a classic film noir. And every Monday is Philip Marlowe Mondays. Movies devoted to that iconic Raymond Chandler character, Philip Marlowe. The private dick. $25 a day plus expenses. And the one we're talking about now, I expected there to be some kind of a drop off in terms of overall quality, but this was still a fine and perfectly good movie.
Absolutely.
We're talking about The Brasher Doubloon from 1947, directed by John Brom, written by Dorothy Bennett. A lady wrote it. And Leonard Praskin's based upon The High Window by Raymond Chandler. And our lead here is George Montgomery, also starring Nancy Guild, Florence Bates, and Conrad Janis. George Montgomery, I would put his swag a little bit above Dick Powell.
Yeah.
But would still would rate Dick Powell's overall delivery above George. But George, he's got a little mustache here. Got a little Marlowe mustache. It kind of looks like a modern dude here in East Nashville. He looks like an East Nashville guy.
He's like a little sassier of a Marlowe.
Mm.
He's a little more,
I think all the Marlowes are sassy.
They are all sassy. Well, he's a little sassier than Powell, I think.
He also looks a little more dapper, I think.
Maybe that's what it is. He's fun. I think he's a good one.
Maybe the prettiest Marlowe we've had so far, but he's not bad at all. And I will say I felt like I followed this story a little better than the others.
This was much more straightforward than most.
But still pretty strange. Like, yes. These are just strange stories, all in all.
The mystery was a little easier to follow.
Our hero, Philip Marlowe, is played by George Montgomery. He gets a call where he meets this lady's secretary, and she's very... what's the word? Demure, paranoid. She's there, happy that he's there, but she won't speak on whatever he's there for.
Yeah, when he first meets her, though, she seems a little more easygoing, and they're flirty.
Yeah.
And it's not really until he sees her with her boss, this older woman, that he truly steps back and says to her, "What are you afraid of?"
Yeah.
What hold does this woman have on you? Because she does sort of warn him, like, "Listen, I just want you to know that my boss, sometimes people think she's a little brash. Sometimes people get the wrong impression. But, you know, I love her. She's my best friend." Weird already. It's also odd to me that obviously this young girl lives in this house, although she's being... it's obvious, paid by these people.
She's an employee. She's also being emotionally gaslit here. Much is obvious.
And there's a son. This family, it's a mother and a son. And we find out the father's dead. The Murdochs. The son is like a young, like...
the father fell out of a high window in their house.
Which, and the book this is based on is called...
The High Window.
The High Window.
He goes and talks to Miss Elizabeth Murdoch, Florence Bates, and she wants him to find a rare coin, the Brasher Doubloon.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows who took it, but she won't tell him.
"Something's been taken from this house, and I want it back."
"Why don't you go to the police?"
"Because I don't wish anyone arrested."
"You know who took it?"
"Yes, I do, but I don't intend to tell you."
"Well, before we go any further, perhaps I'd better tell you that your son tried to get rid of me just now." "Why?"
"I'm not interested in discussing my son's motives with you, Mr. Marlowe."
"Well, have it your way."
Yeah, she's such a shit. She's like, "I know who took it. I'm not going to tell you, but I want you to get it back, and I don't want the police to know. If you know who took it, just fucking go get it."
I mean, it seems kind of obvious that the son is involved. Leslie Murdoch is played by Conrad Janis. Conrad,
he is slimy.
He looks like I actually reveled in hating this character. Oh, yes. Particularly. He looks kind of like Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, you said a young Sinatra.
Fun. Yeah, that too. though Sinatra was like a grown-ass man at this time.
Sure. He's like a smooth-talking little kid who thinks he's like bigger than
his
britches.
Really not that smooth. He just is maybe handsome.
He thinks he is.
He's obviously got something to do with it, but he's also very protective, or at least doesn't want the secretary to be talking too much about what's going on.
And he wants Marla to leave. He tries to say, like, look, I just talked to my mom, and she said she doesn't need you anymore.
The Conrad Janis, who plays Leslie Murdoch, played Mindy's dad in Mork and Mindy. Oh. Fun fact there. If you like fun facts, that's a fun fact for you. So Marlo has to go and figure out what the person who hired him already knows. And we think he kind of has something to do with this snaky-ass kid. But where does he go? He goes to a fencer, right?
Yeah, he goes to a fencer, which, because of this month, I know what that means. And I actually out loud went, using my new knowledge to understand what a fence is. Yeah. So he goes to this man who is kind of in like a seedy business building, but you walk in and he's got all these like jewels. It's very 1940s Gems, that movie with Adam Sandler.
Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems. You know how they have it's like you don't know where you're going and then you walk in and it's like a display case of jewels.
Sure, sure.
Like in a creep, you know, in like a hidden area. And so he goes to this guy and he says, has anyone tried to sell you this doubloon?
Yeah.
And the man says, well, I'm not at liberty to tell you without the person's permission. Again, the woman doesn't care who took the doubloon. She just wants it found and brought back to her. So she does think that whoever took it doesn't have it anymore.
Early on, a one-eyed man like comes into Chandler, or not Raymond Chandler, his character, Philip Marlowe's office.
Oh, yeah.
And pops a gun on him.
How about running out and seeing Mr. Blair now?
Why not? After all, I'm not being paid to gunfight with strangers.
And there's a couple of occasions where kicking someone in the shins will completely disarm them. And he does. He pops him under the shin and then grabs his gun and he points it right back. And this guy has to go scurry off. And
he wants him to come see his boss.
And he's connected with some gangsters. And of course, we get what the connection is through the kid later.
Well, yeah. And this is a trope in Marlowe stories where everyone who comes to him during this period of time has something to do with each other, but it's yet to be determined what that is, right? So, like, everyone who shows up in his office is coming to his office because the other thing is...
The antagonists here all looked real kind of busted, like Dick Tracy villains and
shit. Oh, yeah, definitely. The thing about Marlowe is they immediately try to get him out of the picture. The woman... They basically get an argument as soon as he meets her. And he tells her he quits, but then he does take the job. Because he wants to be with the secretary.
The secretary then gives him the job because he's a little sassy for the ladies.
Well, he takes the check from the lady, tries to give it back to the secretary, and then he goes, you know what, I'll take this job. And he also decides he's going to take the job of loosening up the secretary because she doesn't like to be touched by men. So that's his second job.
Right, she's got a repulsion kind of
Yeah,
vibe.
She does. But she says, she goes, just because I have that problem doesn't mean I don't want to get over it.
That would be like the last woman I would try to get with.
I know.
Like, oh, you repulse my men? I'll let some other guy.
You work in this weird-ass house? You're holding secrets for this weird-ass woman?
I'll leave you alone.
Goodbye.
I'll leave you alone.
It's so funny. But he was, you know, he was drawn in by her immediately.
The way it all converges is just kind of interesting. So I kind of forget maybe what happened one before the other. He does go to see a coin collector, and these guys that he goes to see do start to wind up dead.
Yeah, so he listens in to the coin collector making a phone call after he leaves, because he knows obviously the coin collector's calling the person he's fencing for. Is that how you say that?
Yeah.
And so he gets the name, and he goes to that guy's apartment, and that guy is dead.
Yeah.
And then there's this whole scene with this, I thought, really great character actor playing the superintendent or the, you know, guy in charge of the building, the building manager. He was great. And he has to go downstairs and pretend like he couldn't get into the apartment So that the building manager can find the dead body.
There's these practical things to throw people off. These practical techniques are things that we see in a lot of these PI type movies from back then, where we see how they do these little things to make it look like little things work.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, with modern technology, a lot of that complicates how a lot of this stuff might work today. But it's so interesting to see them go through the practical motions of how they might trick someone into thinking to do something else. Little bit of trickery that seems like it could actually work.
Then he goes to the apartment of the name he gets and finds this dead man.
Yeah.
And so then the building manager's already seen him, so he has to get the building manager to go open the apartment. And then they call the cops because he's basically is like, my first instinct was to run, but the guy had already seen me.
The building manager,
I have to figure this out.
The building manager, even though he goes out of his way to pretend like he didn't go into the room by getting the building manager to go up and go in, the building manager doesn't really seem to buy it once he sees the dead body.
Oh, no. And the cops don't either.
Right.
The cops are like, you were already in here. I love this part, too, because in this movie, you know, there's like these different things where in the last one we watched, Philip Marlowe got hit in the head all the time. In this one, Philip Marlowe is constantly being made to empty his pockets. You know, there's like something.
And he does also get hit in the head.
He does also get hit in the head.
A few times.
Yeah. The cops finally are like, okay, you can leave. But the one thing he gets away with is this claim check he had found in the dead man's pocket. And so he goes to pick up this thing at the train station or wherever, bus station, and he claims this item, and it's the doubloon. It's obviously going to be the doubloon. It's a doubloon-sized box that he picks up, right? And so he goes back to the house, and the secretary's like, wait, didn't you get my wire? You're no longer on this job. Because here's my thing. At the beginning, he says, how'd you hear of me? And she says, I looked you up. So no one knew who they were hiring, and they didn't bank on Marlowe. That's what I think. I think Marlowe then cares too much and needs the answers, and they just wanted a dope that they could tell to do what they needed to do to take the fall for whatever they were doing. And he's like, oh, I didn't get that, but I'm here, and I have this. And they're like, oh, no, we already got the doubloon. And then it becomes like a what's real, what's not real, who's got what where.
It becomes about this film that this and getting rid of Marlowe because he happened to learn too much from the process of trying to pick up a doubloon.
Well, yeah, because he goes back to his apartment or his office after, and there's this man waiting for him, and the man wants the doubloon.
Yeah.
And he gets out of the man that the man won't tell him what he has, but he figures out that the man was a freelance camera operator. So he would film things and then sell his footage. Very Nightcrawler of the day, right? But maybe even like, but in this instance, we find out it was a parade. But he knows that this man was a freelance film guy, and he finds out that this man wants the doubloon because he has something that's more valuable to someone else than the doubloon that he's supposed to trade it for. But this is, that guy made a mistake at this point because he shouldn't have ever gone to Marlowe to just try to get the doubloon without giving over whatever the thing was or telling him what the thing was. He implicated himself in this situation when you find out later that he was actually just dealing with the secretary. The secretary wanted to trade the doubloon for this film.
Well, Mrs. Murdoch, when she's telling, she's sick of Marlowe at this point, she wants him gone because she kind of fucked herself bringing him in, period, like
yeah.
you said. And, but she says, oh, I got it back. But she didn't get it back.
And then he shows her.
Give it to me. Not until those murders are cleared up. Let me know if any further ideas occur to you.
I've already told you all that I know. Give it to me.
You can call the police and tell them that I've got it. And that I won't give it back to you. Going to do that? No police, eh? You know, I don't blame you. I don't like them either right now. Because they think I know more about those murders than I've told them. Is that your reason too, Miss Murdoch?
And her kid admits that, like, which this part apparently may have been true, or at least in some sense that he has gambling problems, that he gambled the doubloon and the gangsters politely handed him back and went in agreement that he'd work harder for them, which sounded like a total lie.
Yeah, which obviously didn't happen, but he did have gambling debts with
gangsters. But the kid does link himself with the gangsters.
And it's the guy with one eye.
Yeah, and so that guy comes back and Marlowe gets the good old blackjack to the back of the head.
I felt better than I had all day. I was finally getting a few facts. I should have realized that might occur to somebody else.
And he gets, and he wakes up and they're beating on him, beating him off.
Mm-hmm, they're beating him off.
They're just beating him the fuck off. This is the porn parody, the Brasher double penetration.
Some point we find out that the old woman has convinced the young secretary that she has lost time. She doesn't know what she does. And so truly, the old woman can blame anything on this young girl because she's gaslit her into thinking that, oh, you have blocks of time that you don't recall. You're crazy.
Ever since we watched Gaslight, suddenly we're seeing so many characters that are like that, like the Bergman character.
Oh yeah,
in that movie. Well, there's always so been weird.
Yeah,
everyone's gaslighting the fuck out of each other this month, all month long. But yeah,
it's crazy. And so eventually, the old woman. I think it's around the same time he's getting shaken up by the mob guys, or that she tells the young girl, listen, you got to take care of this. Like, you got to go kill Marlo.
Yeah.
Like, use your feminine wiles. Or basically, she says, use your feminine wiles and get the fucking doubloon, and I don't care how, and don't come back without it, basically, right? So she didn't say kill him, but she's like, get the goddamn doubloon.
She is pulling guns on him, but like, his dick game and swag game's too strong.
That
she can't
scene,
do it.
She is in his apartment. He comes home. And his doorman is like, a Ms. Jones is in your apartment. He says, was I expecting her? And he said, well, she said you were. So I let her in. I hope that's okay. Yeah. Right? Because Marlo's also kind of a player, right? So you know the doorman's probably let girls into his apartment before to wait on him. Mm-hmm. But he gets up there and obviously it's her. And she flirts with him a little bit. It's the sexiest she's dressed the entire movie. Like, she kind of has this, like, lower cut thing. So she's obviously there to try to seduce him, I guess. Mm. But she hates being touched. Anyway, he gives her a lesson in kissing.
Not the best subplot.
No, but he gives her
characterization.
Yeah, he gives her this lesson in kissing. And he gets more information out of her. And then she pulls the gun on him. And he tricks her by telling her that, because it's his gun, he tells her it's not loaded. Yeah. And takes it from her and then takes all the bullets out. Yeah, and she's like, oh, you tricked me. Like, she's very like.
Don't they together find out that Vassar, the film guy, he got killed? Off screen.
Yeah, because.
Don't they go to where he was and they find a film reel in a roll of toilet paper?
Yes. So it's weird because. Towels. Basically, he leaves to go sleep at his apartment because he's like, I don't trust you, but I'm going to help you. But you still could be the killer, but because the other two, because also the coin man is dead now. So the coin man's dead, the apartment man with the ticket is dead. And so he's like, you could kill me next. And so he leaves her there. The next day, he's still trying to figure things out and he gets this call from her and she's frantic. And he says, okay, I'll be right there. Stay where you are. And he goes to this house, this cottage looking thing. That apparently is not that far away, but seems like they're far away. Anyway, out of the city. And so she's there, and she says, you know, the film guy's dead.
He's still warm.
He was like that when I came in. The door was wide open. I didn't do it.
Well, it wasn't a man. No man scratches up another man's arm.
How long have you been here?
About 15 minutes. No one answered the door, and I just walked in.
What did you come out here for, anyway?
To beg Mr. Veneer to give me the films. But he was already like that.
And he basically looks at her and is like, why are you here? What happened? And she's like, I didn't kill him. I found him like this. I came here to beg him to give me the film. Still doesn't... She still hasn't said exactly what's on the film, but we know it's... She thinks she killed the husband.
It's important enough that she cares.
Yeah, it's like proof of something bad that she's done, and we know the husband's dead, and it, you know, you kind of put two and two together. But they're searching all over the house because the guy's dead already, so to try to find the film. And you're right, they find it in a paper towel roll. She tries to burn it, and right then, Leonardo DiCaprio runs in, the son, and he's like... he tries to get all of it. And then I don't exactly remember what happened.
I think he knocks him out. Anyway, we'll cut to the end and Marlo has the film and all the police and everyone are gathered around.
In his office and he's doing a viewing.
And well, someone's going to be arrested at the end of this, whether it be who Marlo is implicating or Marlo himself.
The gangsters are there. The son is there. The mom shows up. The whole cast shows up
to pull the... to see who the villain in the Scooby-Doo episode is. And it's actually quite funny where they get to the video and it's of the third story. The guy happened to have recorded a man falling out of the window, the high window, their father.
Stop it. Stop it. I did it. I did it. You know I did it.
She stands up and she's like, I did it. You all know I did it. I don't want to see this anymore. And then he goes,
not so fast, Lieutenant. Sit down, all of you. It was too far away for you to see anyone clearly. These are the films that Veneer used for blackmail, all right. But they don't prove anything. Now, here's an enlarged version of the same films. Hit the switch back there, Gimme.
This is very funny. Excellent camera quality of the time for a casual guy to have. Does a nice, lovely pan where he goes from the parade and he sees the window. And he's got great zoom-in technology, which is good. And he manages to zoom in. And what do you know?
Well, Marlo says he has someone zoom in. It's like a CSI bullshit where it's like, let me just hit this button six times and I can see this face. That's exactly it.
This is
you wouldn't be able to see it ever.
At least this particular piece of technology should not be this clear.
You cannot zoom in on a film reel. Film reel. You cannot. But that's what they did.
But we do zoom in and it's very clear. That Mrs. Elizabeth Murdoch shoved her own husband out the window. The end. Oh, yeah. And then he makes out with the girl and she's over her repulsion at the end.
Well, and we find out apparently Murdoch blamed the girl because she thought her husband was sleeping with the secretary, but the secretary thought he was gross. So that wasn't even happening.
Oh, and Mrs. Murdoch's kid, Leslie, is the guy that killed all the other guys, which we kind of knew that.
Yeah.
So he'll probably go to the gas chamber. And she'll at least spend the rest of her life locked up.
Mother and son killing team.
And Merle Davis will get dicked down by Philip Marlowe and then tossed aside by the next movie. So So she'll probably get her repulsion back because all the stuff of Marlowe mistreating women is all off camera. So yeah, that's The Brasher Doubloon from 1947. Not bad at all. In some parts, but still kind of fun to take in.
Definitely fun. There were no pirates.
So we're going to give this 1 through 5 each combined for best out of 10. Is the Brasher Doubloon like a pirate coin?
I think that's what I think. Like the gold coins like that. I wanted there to be some story. The only story they told about the doubloon is that every man who's ever owned it has come to some sort of terrible death because of a woman.
Right.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Except our hero, I guess. What do you score this one?
3.25.
I think that's a fair assessment. I'm gonna match you. That's a 6.5. 6.5 joins the rankings of such films as Scream 6, Pillow Talk, John Q, Halloween 2.
This all feels appropriate.
And the Richard Donner cut of Superman 2. The Brasher Doubloon by John Brom from 1947 is at least as good as those movies, if not better. Plenty more, all for the rest of the week, 5 days a week. Check the show notes for links, other places to find us. Like and subscribe. We appreciate it when you do that. Comment. Leave a comment. Fun facts, corrections. We're not afraid of corrections. We're wrong all the time. We bring fun facts. But it doesn't mean that we don't miss some things. And we're enthusiasts, not experts. But I don't know. A few hundred more of these movie talks. We'll be pretty close, I think. But
what is it? 10,000 hours?
Right. That thing that Malcolm Gladwell made up.
Mm.
Sure. I mean, I think it goes without saying that if you spend an insane amount of time with something, that you'll learn it. People really, blew that guy, man.
I know. It was ridiculous.
You mean if you work an insane amount of time on something, you're going to get good at it? I mean, the 10,000 hours is just him throwing a fucking number out there.
But people
Why not just say 15,000 hours?
Or 9.
I bet in 7,000 hours, you could probably
absolutely
get what you got in 10.
Depending on what you're doing, 5.
Although I'm still learning, you know, I'm always still learning.
Absolutely.
So supposing we get out of here.
Supposing we do.